Now, today's topic is hypothesis tests. And hypothesis tests, there's some similarities between hypothesis testing and confidence intervals. First of all, our focus at this point is still on getting the terminology right. We're continuing to assume that the standard deviation is known, and we take a sample and find the mean from the sample. So again, it's unrealistic in the sense that we're assuming the standard deviation is known. Usually it would be unknown. And the situation is we have a hypothesis about the mean that we want to test. And I'm actually going to defer talking about what exactly hypothesis testing is. I'm just going to walk through the mechanics of the calculation and then go back and say, what are we doing and why are we doing it? The calculation moves in the opposite direction of confidence intervals. Confidence intervals, we go from a percentile to natural units. The hypothesis test, we go from natural units to a percentile. So let's take an example. Suppose that we knew that the longevity for people born in September is 77.8 years, and that we want to see whether people born in May have the same longevity. That is, do they on average live to be 77.8 years? So we take a sample of people born in May, and let's say we take a sample of 1,600 people, going back, obviously people born, let's say, 100 years ago, born in May, and we find that they have an average longevity of 77.5 years, and that the population standard deviation is known to be 4 years. So again, we assume that the population standard deviation is known. So we do a calculation to see how far away 77.5 is from 77.8. So we measure that in terms of a percentile. Okay, so we have that in natural units. We use the Z transformation to convert to standard deviations. So Z is equal to X bar minus mu over sigma over square root of n. X bar is our sample mean. Mu is the mean that we're comparing it to. Sigma is our population standard deviation, and n is our sample size. So in this case, X bar is 77.5. That's what we found in our sample. 77.8 is what we're testing it against. That's the hypothesis that we're testing against is that it's 77.8. And then we divide by sigma over the square root of n. Sigma we were given as 4 years, and the sample size is 1,600. So we put that all in, and we get a value of Z of -3. So we're 3 standard deviations away from the mean, which I'll tell you is pretty far. So what's the percentile? Well, for the percentile, we go back and do a norm CDF from negative infinity to -3, or I type in -100 to -3, and you get a value of about 0.0013, or about a 1.3% chance that this would happen is one way of looking at it. So the percentile is 1.3%, or just 0.0013. Now, because this is very small, what that's saying is that if the true population parameter for people in May were that the longevity would people born in May was a longevity of 77.8 years, if that were the true population parameter, then the probability of observing the sample result that we obtained would be only 0.0013. Because there is a very low probability of observing the sample result if that were the true mean, we tend to doubt that 77.8 is the true mean. And what we say is we reject the hypothesis that the true mean is 77.8 in favor of the alternative that the true mean is lower than that. Okay, so first question is how low is low for this probability? I said 0.0013 is small, so how low is low? Well, I say it's below 0.05. It is typically a good cutoff. So when you get a when you do the norm CDF and you get a probability that's below 0.05 or below 5%, that's usually a good reason to reject the original hypothesis. Okay, so now let's back into explaining a little bit what we're doing and why we're doing it. Okay, the general procedure is we state what's called the null hypothesis. That's the champion. In this example, the null hypothesis is that the mean longevity for those born in May is 77.8 years, which is what the same as what we found in September. The alternative hypothesis is a challenger. So the challenger might be that the mean longevity for those born in May is less than 77.8 years. That's the challenger. Okay, the third step is we take the sample and we compute the mean. Okay, so we have a hypothesis going in about what the mean's going to be. We have an alternative hypothesis, and now we're going to get some data and we take the sample and compute the mean. So in this case, the sample means 77.5 years. Now we calculate a percentile for the mean if the null hypothesis were true, starting using Z and then using norm CDF. So we take the natural units that we get for the sample mean, compare them to the natural units for the null hypothesis, divide by sigma over the square root of n. That gives us a Z value. And then we use a norm CDF to find a percentile. Finally, step five is we draw a conclusion by comparing the percentile to some arbitrary limit, and I've suggested 0.05 as the arbitrary limit. If the percentile is below the limit, we reject the null hypothesis and dethrone the challenger. So that's the general procedure. Well, why do we go through it that way? Let's talk a little bit about decision theory. One way to think about this is that there's a lot of parallel between rejecting the null hypothesis and convicting a person and sending them to jail, so convicting the accused person. So let's talk about the possibilities when we have a trial by jury. First of all, the person could either be truly guilty or truly innocent. This is something that nobody knows, but the person could either be truly guilty or truly innocent. And then the decision that the jury makes is either to convict or acquit. Okay, and so they can e there are four possibilities. They can convict someone who's guilty, or they can convict an innocent person, or they could acquit a guilty person, or they could acquit an innocent person. So those are the four possibilities. Two of them are correct decisions. That is, if you convict somebody and they really committed the crime, that's a correct decision. And if you acquit a truly innocent person, that's also a correct decision. But there are also two possibilities that are errors. If you convict an innocent person, we'll call that a type 1 error. And if you acquit a guilty person, we call that a type 2 error. Now, when we have the jury system, we say someone's innocent until proven guilty. So in some sense, the null hypothesis is that the person is innocent. That is, we want to assume that the person's innocent, and we want plenty of evidence to be there before we convict them. So what we're saying, in effect, is that a type 1 error is really serious. Sending an innocent person to jail is a really bad move. On the other hand, acquitting a guilty person, that's also a mistake, but it's not such a bad mistake that you would be willing to send a lot of innocent people to jail just to convict one guilty person. In fact, you'd be willing to do it the other way around. You're willing to acquit a bunch of guilty people rather than send one innocent person to jail. So that's so we ref would refer to sending the innocent person to jail as type 1 error, and that's the more serious error, and acquitting the guilty person as type 2 error, and that's the less serious error. Okay, so in terms of hypothesis testing, we again have four possibilities. One is that if someone knew the true parameter, they would know that the null hypothesis is false. Another possibility is that knowing the true parameter, you would know that the null hypothesis is true, right? But we don't know what the true parameter is. All we have is some sample data, and we have some rules for rejecting the null hypothesis and for failing to reject the null hypothesis. Okay, if we reject the null hypothesis and it was truly false and we've made a correct decision. If we fail to reject it, and it's truly, and the null hypothesis is true, we've made a correct decision. We say we've made a type 1 error corresponding to sending an innocent person to jail if we reject the null hypothesis when the null hypothesis is true. And we say we've committed a type 2 error if we fail to reject the null hypothesis when in fact it's false. And so we allow ourselves, what we do is we give ourselves a low probability of making a type 1 error. That's what that 0.05 means. We might give a five, that would mean a 5% probability of making a type 1 error. But when we do that, we have a relatively high probability of making a type 2 error. I mean, it's not 1 minus the probability of making a type 1 error because we also have the other possibilities of making correct decisions. So there are four possibilities. We can make a type 1 error, we can make a type 2 error, or we can make a correct decision, either to reject or to fail to reject the null hypothesis. Okay, so let's get some more terminology. I've been using the term a null hypothesis. Null hypothesis is the hypothesis that you're testing. It'll be written as H sub 0 or H naught is the way it's pronounced. The subscript 0 is pronounced naught, so H naught, null hypothesis. It is always written as an equality. So in our example, the null hypothesis is that mu, the true parameter for the mean longevity of people born in May, is 77.8 years. So we always write it as an equality. In this case, mu is equal to 77.8. The alternative hypothesis we call HA, A for alternative, and that's always an inequality. So it might be the alternative is mu is less than 77.8. Another piece of terminology is a p-value. The p-value is what we call the percentile that we get when we do the calculation. So when we got 0.0013 when we did the calculation, that's called the p-value. If you were to multiply it by 100, you would have the p-value measured in percentile. It's the 0.13 percentile. It doesn't mean it's in the 13th percentile. It means it's in the 0.13 percentile. Another piece of terminology is a significance level, which we call alpha. And that's the arbitrary hurdle that's set by the investigator. For example, I keep suggesting that 0.05 be the hurdle. And that's the same as 5%. So if you say a significance level of 5% or a significance level of 0.05, you're saying the same thing. So technically, alpha, or the significance level, is the probability that we give ourselves of making a type 1 error. If the p-value is below alpha, we reject the null hypothesis and accept the alternative. Otherwise, we fail to reject the null hypothesis. Now, why do we reject when the p-value is below alpha? It's because what we're saying is that if the null hypothesis were true, the probability of finding the results in our data is extremely low, so that the probability that we are rejecting the null hypothesis when in fact it's true is very low. And so the lower that probability of type 1 error is, the more it makes sense to reject the null hypothesis. So that's why we reject it when the p-value is below alpha. Now, why do we never say that we accept the null hypothesis? Because we have not really proven that it's true. It's just that we didn't find enough evidence that it's false. If we took a really small sample size, then we would almost never be able to reject the null hypothesis because the sigma over the square root of n with a small sample size is going to be large, and so we would have a lot of difficulty rejecting the null hypothesis. So we don't want to just conclude, well, we can accept the null hypothesis because we did a really lousy job, took a low sample, and didn't find strong evidence against it, so we're going to accept it. So that's just not the way it wor works. So we can either reject or fail to reject the null hypothesis. And we can either, for the alternative, we say we accept it or we don't accept it. Okay, so what does all this mean? So once again, as with confidence intervals, we are not making statements about the true parameter. What we're doing is making statements about our methods and the reasons for making our decision. So saying that we reject the null hypothesis at a 5% significance level is saying that based on our sample mean and sample size, we would incorrectly reject the null hypothesis. That is, we would make a type 1 error no more than 5% of the time. So in classical statistics, the null hypothesis is either true or it isn't. You can't say that there's a 0.13% probability that the null hypothesis is true. What you say instead is that there's a 0.13% probability that you would be committing a type 1 error by rejecting the null hypothesis. Again, you can only make probability statements about your statistical methods. All right, as a final thing, I'd like to talk about some good habits about doing problems when there's a hypothesis test. First, it's a good idea to state the null hypothesis in words and then again in symbols. So in this case, the null hypothesis is that the mean longevity of people born in May is 77.8 years. The alternative hypothesis is that the mean longevity is lower than that. So let mu equal the mean longevity of people born in May. In symbols we have H naught, mu is equal to 77.8, HA, mu is less than 77.8. So that's our first good habit, stating the null hypothesis in words and symbols, also the alternative hypothesis. Next, state the significance level that you chose. Okay, sometimes in a problem they'll say, do this test at a 5% level of significance. Often they won't give you a level, and so you pick one, and the most common one is 0.05, so alpha equals 0.05. State the sample results. Well, with a sample size n of 1600, the sample mean x bar was 77.5. Finally, state the p-value that you calculated, which is 0.0013. Now you compare the p-value to alpha and state a conclusion. In this case, because 0.0013 is less than 0.05, we reject the null hypothesis that the mean longevity of people born in May is 77.8 years and accept the alternative that the mean longevity is lower. So it's important to remember, when the p-value is less than alpha, we reject the null hypothesis. When the p-value is greater than alpha, we fail to reject. So you get a significant result when you get a low p-value, a significant result meaning that you reject the null hypothesis. So a low p-value is a more significant result.